Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
The Bob Seska Show.
Bob Seska.
Hello, Seska. You're looking radiantly maternal.
The Bob Seska Show.
From our nation's capital, it is Tuesday, June 14, 2022, and this is the Bob Seska Show on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. What's up? How you doing? My name is Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Hi. Day 513 of the Biden-Harris administration. 143 days until the 22 midterms. I'm on Instagram. My handle is TheBobSeska. Twitter, BobSeska_go. And you can follow Buzz Burbank at Michael J. Elston on Twitter. Link in the description. Oh, and look, he's sitting right over there.
When you say Buzz Burbank.
But why?
You've said it all.
Good day, why, sir. Hi.
Why do I need makeup? It's like radio. I don't mind the makeup, but I hate the prosthetics, you know?
That's right. Are you wearing your John Mitchell Sean Penn makeup today? Is that what you're doing?
Yes, my chin. Yeah. Anyway, hi, everybody. He's Bob. I'm Buzz. And after listening to all our advisors on how to handle today's show, we've decided to take the advice of a drunk guy.
Favorite story of the day.
Oh, speaking of that, we know a lot of you listen at different times of day and in different time zones. Mm-hmm. So we just want to assure you that whatever time it is, wherever you are, there's a pretty good chance Giuliani's stinking drunk.
Yep.
Is that your watch by it?
Yeah.
There's actually a new cocktail called the Drunk Rudy. Have you heard of this?
Of course there is.
The Drunk Rudy is two shots of vodka and just a dribble of black hair dye.
Ew.
The January 6th hearings have been great so far, haven't they?
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah, there's really, as far as I'm concerned, only one big disappointment. And no musical numbers. Well, one of the first bombshells, you know, in the J6 hearings was Ivanka Trump saying about the election results she believed Bill Barr over her dad.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's destroyed her close relationship with her dad. But I think we're all relieved they waited to break up until after prom season.
And gross.
In Alaska's congressional primary over the weekend, Sarah Palin was the big winner, beating out the other candidates, including one candidate whose legal name is Santa Claus.
Of course.
Now, here's why I'm nervous. Santa's telling the elves to stand back and stand by.
Oh, that was good.
Was it?
Oh, man, here we go.
Ah, Crackpot Rudy, he's on board. No evidence there that he cares to take along. Maybe he's wrong, but it won't be long. He needs to self-please and he'll put his pants on. She got the way to make him
happy.
To obscurity, he's going in style.
Crackpot Rudy, you're a dollar store mouthpiece. You make it look like your head shoots out wheel grease. So tuck in your shirt while you keep on laying down.
Oh, yeah.
It's despicable.
Oh, yeah. Rocky Mountain Mike.
Yes. I love it.
Fantastic.
Classic. Perfect. Rocky MNTN Mike on Twitter. Thank you, Mike.
Perfect for today. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Buy me now a Coke. We're get-
jinx, double jinx. Yeah. We're getting too close, I think.
I know. I think we are. We dress the same now. We're actually somehow holding hands, even though, I don't know, we're about 1,500 miles apart. But sure.
I'm wearing the white V-neck T-shirt. So.
I knew it. One of these days, I knew it would catch on. Desperately trying to make that a thing. Okay.
It has.
Welcome to the show, our big Tuesday show. We've got lots of things to talk about today. More dings than we know what to do with. Obviously, we're going to talk about both days of the 1-6 committee hearings. That's going to be the bulk of the show. Plus, later on, we have to talk about the finale of Gaslit on the Starz network and G. Gordon Liddy's... culminating plot line in that episode, which is,
you know, we worked with him and we're still taken by what we've seen in this miniseries, which is just incredibly good, unbelievably riveting and highly entertaining and kind of informative and educational at the same time, but just riveting viewing and really a fantastic job. So we were, even having worked with Liddy, we were somewhat taken aback by what we saw, and so we hope to sort of share some of that with you without spoiling it.
If he's in real life, or was in real life, half as nuts as he is in that miniseries,
I don't know.
Oh my God. We were like one door over from the enemy. I mean, I was completely justified in being absolutely terrified of him.
I felt safe in that environment, you know, at the radio station. I didn't think he would do anything there. I guess I didn't give any thought to off campus, but I figured he didn't give much thought to me. So I didn't feel like a target, even though perhaps at moments in his mind I was.
Well, I tell you, after what we did to him, after the Letterman photo flap, once we posted up all those little Letterman heads all over the radio station, if I walked into the bathroom there off the lobby at WJFK and Liddy was in there, I would make a U-turn and leave immediately. I didn't want to be locked in the same.
You're lucky to be alive.
God damn it. And if I was in there and then he wandered up to the stall next to me, my business in the bathroom was over at that
Zip
point.
Zip up and
so
you're
to speak.
Out of there, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So tomorrow's hearings, you broke the news earlier today, Buzz, on Twitter. Tomorrow's hearings have been postponed. What's the explanation behind that, the Wednesday
hearings? Well, there was none at first, but of course you have to stop speculation before it gets spread too far, such as it did yesterday when we heard that a key witness had canceled.
But it
turns out that it's a sort of a technical matter. It has to do with the video editing, and it's not complete. It's not ready. The video editors are not ready for tomorrow's planned presentation about Trump's pressure on the Justice Department. That's specifically what the Wednesday hearing was supposed to be about. And you have to wonder a couple of things. Let's go over some realistic possibilities for why the delay. One, because that witness didn't show yesterday, the editors had to stop their work on future episodes of the hearings and go back and find the Stepien tape and insert it in the proper places and get the tape numbers to everybody and get all that straightened out. So they lost some prep time yesterday that they weren't expecting to lose. And they're probably working on a tight schedule anyway. So that's one explanation. The second explanation, it seems to me, is that there may be new testimony. There may be new tape to edit
in. Oh, boy. All right.
Or, you know, there may be new material to edit into that. And then my third theory goes to something that I think the committee accidentally discovered yesterday.
Okay.
This was key, and this was toward the very end of yesterday's hearing, when we got a little presentation about how Trump grifted his supporters, about how he lied about the election results to get people to storm the Capitol, and lied about the election results long after the election to raise money, telling his supporters that the money was for legal defense and legal challenges to election, when in fact it just went into Trump's pocket. that is fraud. And the committee exposed some of that yesterday, and I think they knew about the fraud to begin with, but I don't think they were thinking of their pursuit from the angle of fraud. I think they're taking fraud much more seriously now, wire fraud, as something that could really pin Trump. If seditious conspiracy doesn't stick, then wire fraud does. And you, Bob, have been saying all along, election fraud. Yeah. This is actually financial fraud, wire fraud. It's absolutely a crime, brings down the biggest of criminals, and very promising. So I think the committee has... they had something and they knew they had it, but I don't think they realized how valuable it was until it began to crystallize in yesterday's hearings and we began to get analysis of it. Mm-hmm. And when that happened, I think the committee realized, oh, God, we've got gold here.
Oh, yeah,
so
yeah.
It'll be interesting to see where that goes and if any of those theories are correct. But that hearing about the Justice Department will be held later. Thursday's hearing will be as scheduled about the pressure on Vice President Pence.
Oh, boy. But all right.
They'll come back to the Justice Department in a future yet-to-be-scheduled hearing.
So it's going to be a lot of John Eastman and Donald Trump Thursday night, sounds like. I mean, it was John Eastman's plan,
right,
even though he
right.
didn't really believe in it. And then it was all those interactions between Trump and Pence that we've seen before. And in fact, we've seen the story about Save America PAC before and how
right.
much of
yes.
a scam it was and how much money Donald Trump is spending on the actual election thing versus the amount of money he's just sticking in his pocket, like everything right. else. That it's a big right. grift. It's a big scam. Suffice to say, only a teeny tiny bit, if at all, is being spent on investigating the election and so
right.
on. So, and the other thing is, I wanted to mention regarding tomorrow's hearing being postponed, mm-hmm. is having done video editing work in the past,
right. uh-huh.
I know what it's like to have a million chefs in the kitchen all providing
right.
notes and having last minute changes, last minute additions. In something that's as crucial as this, I can't even imagine the amount of notes that are being handed down as far as
yeah.
that presentation goes.
I have a friend
goes.
Who was yeah. an editor for NBC Nightly News, a video editor for the Nightly News for a while, and they would come to him with stories, pieces of stories, 15 minutes to airtime.
Yeah, yeah.
And say, put this together for us.
Oh, really? Yeah, it's like broadcast and news. Bobby, that scene in broadcast news.
Right.
I've been there.
Yeah, and like I said, if there is new testimony or to some tape, maybe they've decided to, you know, again, from this fraud angle, maybe they've got something they want to go back and, oh, I remember this guy saying, let's go back to this tape.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there could be changes underway to that as well. They want to make sure that that hearing is as tight and as powerful as the first two. If I may, just a word about the programming here.
Yeah.
There's been some discussion of the guy who's sort of producing this, a former ABC News producer and executive who has done a fantastic job of helping the committee tell its story. But I've noticed that it's even like next time on J6, they do a little thing. They recap, like at the beginning of the second hearing, they recapped what they covered in the first hearing.
Mm-hmm.
First hearing was basically a lawyer's opening statement and an outline of what they intend to cover during the rest of the hearings.
Yeah.
Tuesday, they opened it with sort of previously on, and they talked about what they had discussed the day before, and then at the end of the hearing, played a little clip from an upcoming hearing.
It's yes, like, dude, that's
you know,
so great.
So it's sort of television packaging, but I've read about this ABC News executive, and I understand why conservatives are nervous. This guy is highly, highly ethical. His career, from all appearances, from everything I've read, and I've done a fair amount of reading on this guy, they're in good hands. They've got an honest guy helping them with the video presentation, the television presentation of these congressional hearings.
That first hour Thursday night was
yeah.
so immensely compelling. In fact, you know what? The second hour was too. It was compelling in a different way. It was more of a
right.
personal story from Officer Edwards, who's one of the
yes.
bravest people I think we can name right now.
And that was important too.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, not only in terms of how she handled her duty on that day on January 6th and the abuse that she took, physical abuse and so on, and probably
right.
the subsequent bouts with post-traumatic stress disorder and all the rest mm-hmm. of it, but also her bravery in standing up and speaking out, knowing full well that there's this gigantic cult-like movement of just the worst possible freakish weirdos that you could ever come up with, who are most likely filling her inbox with the most heinous, horrifying dreck that you've ever seen. I can't even imagine what her inbox looks like. So
yeah, we've seen examples of the kinds of threats that get emailed or private messaged to various people.
Yeah, but that first hour was well beyond expectations from what we were discussing beforehand and what we might see that night. It exceeded my expectations for sure, because the way they were putting together set up, punchline. It wasn't literally a punchline like a joke, but it was the setup, and then they would reinforce it with this barn burner of a clip. We had Bill Barr. We had Ivanka Trump. We had Liz Cheney with a direct quote about hanging Mike Pence. I mean, that was one of the most, if I were to pick out the most historically relevant bit from that first hour of the first night, it would have to be, maybe our supporters have the right idea. Mike Pence deserves it. And the fact that that was a quote, and I assume Liz Cheney was quoting Cassidy Hutchinson, who has allegedly provided this information to the 1-6 committee. And
she was, now she was chief of staff for Pence. Is that correct?
You know what? That's a good question.
I know that Pence's chief of staff is a key witness. I don't know if it's her or not, but she is also an important witness in this. But the beauty of this, you and I had talked about this in a previous week, and you were kind of scrambling while I was filling time. You were kind of scrambling to find the quote of Trump. And I knew at the time that there was no quote. It hadn't been revealed. So it was in that Thursday hearing that we heard the quote for the first time, the words that were supposedly actually spoken by the president. And so finally, my thought was, now we have that quote.
Cassidy Hutchinson was an aide to Mark Meadows.
I see. Well, Pence's chief of staff will be a key witness on Thursday as well. So
right.
And that's the thing. And I mentioned this, I think, last week, too. Most of the testimony, most of the people doing the talking in these hearings are Republicans, not just Republicans. They're Trump Republicans.
And so,
this isn't all Democratic propaganda. These are Republicans providing the evidence. And to your point about punchlines, I think a lawyer would call it evidence. Conclusion, evidence, conclusion, set up punchline, but it was providing evidence in chronological order of what happened and laying out the story. And so many people, and I think Republicans and Democrats, are coming away saying, I did not know that. I didn't, everybody seems to come out of this having learned something they didn't know before or didn't understand before about this. I think these hearings are working. I think these hearings can change minds. It reminds me of Watergate, and we'll be talking about this in parallels today, but it reminds me of Watergate in the sense that at first, no Republicans bought the story. And then after a while, some did, and then they tumbled, and it became like an avalanche. And then you get down to the hardcore Nixon supporters who never gave up supporting Nixon, who held on to him beyond the very end. You'll see that same thing here. You'll see that, but I also think you'll see the crumbling away of support that we saw in Nixon's time. I have a good feeling about the effectiveness of these hearings.
Look, ultimately, they could put together a list of a couple hundred Democrats, liberals, people who have observed this stuff, certainly journalists who have researched and reported on this information. But having Republicans, Trump insiders in particular, testifying here, and having those receipts from Republicans adds so much legitimacy to what they're saying, because we're talking about the phone call coming from inside the House, whether it's Bill Stepien, which we're going to discuss with regard to day two, or Ivanka Trump, for God's sake, right there in the room. Bill Barr as well. These are Trump insiders, the most insider of Trump insiders. We're basically testifying against him and calling his words bullshit.
Right. And they were under oath. They had to.
I think from a bigger picture point of view, I just want to make mention of this. I said something along these lines on the after party, so forgive me for repeating myself. But so much of what we're seeing in these hearings is due to Trump's pathological inability to accept failure and rejection.
Right. Or defeat, yeah.
He failed the nation, failed his fanboys, failed his party, failed the office of the presidency. So America rejected him. And given the choice between acceptance or coup, Donald Trump chose coup. Now the new vernacular is, what, Team Normals versus Team Rudy, drunken Rudy, which we're going to talk about with regard to day two. But that's the overview of this. This all went down because Donald Trump can't accept defeat. He's incapable. He's not wired to be able to say, well, you know, I gave it my best shot and I came up short. You know, like every single president who's ever lost a re-election campaign has done.
Yesterday's testimony, and this may be illustrated in one of the upcoming tapes, but yesterday's testimony indicated that every time they would tell Trump that a specific bizarre theory had been investigated and nothing was found, he, instead of responding to that, he would say, yeah, but what about this? And then he would move on to another bizarre conspiracy theory. And serious people actually had to track this crap down, and every time they found nothing, but every time they tried to tell him about one specific thing, he would move on to another item, and then they, you know. So, and there's a lot of discussion about, you know, Bill Barr's comment that Trump was detached from reality. That could be an out in Trump's defense. Well, he was crazy. He didn't know what he was doing. Well, but there's a difference between not knowing something or knowing something and acting contrarily to that, or hearing something but sticking your head in the sand and not responding to it, not believing it.
Yeah.
And that, too, is a criminal act. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see how that goes, but I don't think it's anything Trump can wriggle out of.
Well, we saw Merrick Garland, what was it, yesterday, say something to the effect of that we're watching, our prosecutors are watching, our 1-6 prosecutors are watching.
His people are watching, that's right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I hope that is the sign that some of us are taking it to be. My fingers are crossed. I'm relatively confident something has got to come of this, or something will come of this.
There's a lot of understandable skepticism out there that nothing will come of this. But and I totally get where that's coming from. But for Merrick Garland to say, "Yes, we hear you.
Yeah,
we're listening. We were paying attention." I think is a very good sign. I still hear from people, and people are so eager when they heard that today's hearing had been canceled. Somebody said, "Oh, is he getting arrested today?"
Oh, Trump? God, come on!
Well, you know, that's not even realistic. I'm sorry, you don't understand. I'm glad you're on our side, but you don't understand how things work.
Yeah, yeah.
It's nothing like that. And people still saying, "Well, why hasn't the committee, referred criminal charges yet to the Justice Department?" Well, because they're not finished yet, for one thing. And for another, as I've said before, it may not even be necessary. The public pressure, the information that DOJ is exposed to through these hearings, is going to make prosecution by them, in my view, unavoidable. They'll have no choice.
Nobody
has to tell them to prosecute this. All we have to do is lay out the evidence, and they're going to have to.
So there are myriad things that Trump could be charged with coming out of this. It's just a matter of whether or not the mindfulness to history and precedent is overruled by the desperate need to enforce the rule of law here. So we'll see plays out.
Since you brought up Merrick Garland, this is the sort of rock and hard place that Merrick Garland is between right now. As I understand it, based on what I've read, Garland feels that if he prosecutes Trump, he will unleash terrible violence in this country. That the response from that could, you know, and I'm going to add, this is me talking here, maybe civil war level violence, but at the very least, mass violence.
Yeah.
On the other hand, if he doesn't prosecute Trump, we lose democracy.
Sure.
So these are the choices that Merrick Garland has that y'all are putting pressure on him about. Which do I take? Death in the streets, or we think he's going to come down on the right side of things, but you also know he's going to be very, very careful about it because of the high stakes.
What's the Shakespeare quote? "Let justice be done, though the heavens fall." Maybe we need some of that with Donald Trump in particular. Right. I think it's more important to make sure that we don't establish the precedent of Trump.
Yes.
That, I think that far outweighs the precedent of prosecuting a former president.
If we let this go, we can never stop it again.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, Bill Barr's testimony, I think, is some of the most compelling, given that he was specifically hired to rip the teeth out of the Mueller investigation. I mean, that was primarily what he did early on.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Bill Barr has been all into the idea of covering shit up for Donald Trump, using the DOJ as Donald Trump's personal fixer.
Even while Barr was saying these things to Trump privately, like these conspiracy theories are bullshit,
yeah.
Even though Barr was saying that to Trump privately, Barr was still covering for Trump publicly, saying, mm-hmm. well, we're looking into this. I'm going to launch an investigation. You know, and so there were two Bill Barrs at work here, and you know, now we're getting to see the one we didn't get to see before.
The fascinating thing is that this happens all the time. What happened with Bill Barr happens all the time with people joining the Trump administration. We've seen it time and time again. For example, John Kelly moving over from DHS to become chief of staff. So, oh, right, I'm all in on this MAGA agenda. I like Donald Trump. I voted for Donald Trump. I'm on board. I'm going to serve at the pleasure of this president. And then they get in there and they're like, oh, fuck, what is this? What is he? What does he say? He's, oh, my God, the liberals, the press, they're all correct. Everything they're saying about this madman is exactly spot on. It took a matter of days between John Kelly joining up as chief of staff and us seeing photos of him at Trump rallies doing face palming and looking absolutely disgusted with what's going on.
What have I done?
Yeah. Every single one of these guys get into the Trump inner loop, and they go in with all these delusions about what he's like, and then they actually experience, and it's like mind-blowing for them. Oh, my God, I can't believe this is real.
And forgive me, indulge me, but in the miniseries Gaslit, John Dean offers a perfect explanation for why people walk into the fan blade like this.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I noticed that, too.
The luxurious seats. The stationery that has, the White House stationery that has your name on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the power. It's people addicted to, drunk on, or at least attracted to power.
Yeah.
And once you get a thing like that, you don't want to give up your White House stationery. So this is, as bizarre as it seems, this vanity is the motivation for following a guy like Trump.
I wonder if Bill Barr was surprised when he decided that Donald Trump's claims about whatever he was saying, the big lie, was bullshit. I wonder if that was a surprise to him. Oh, my God, this guy's bullshitting me. I can't believe it. Or, oh, well, here he goes again with more bullshit. Yeah.
I think Barr was willing to play along with a certain amount of it.
Yeah.
Because conservative agenda. It was the same way Republican lawmakers played along with it, because conservative agenda. But I think there came a point where he went, ooh, you know, this is okay. This is a bridge too far for me. Even mm-hmm. I'm out of here. And so that meant he had to give up his Justice Department stationery.
Yeah.
It's a hard thing to do, apparently, at least according to John Dean, who ultimately did it.
This is fascinating, too, watching not only people turning on Fox News, but also turning on Bill Barr. Zaki Hassan, who I've had on the interview show in the past, is a great guy, great writer. He posted these two tweets from Dinesh D'Souza. Right. Where, going back to 2019, there's the first tweet from 2019 about Bill Barr from Dinesh D'Souza. He says, when the media left goes berserk, Republicans typically panic. I love the way Barr stays cool and methodically hits back with facts and logic. That's the way to deal with these dishonest creeps. Keep calm and whack them again. Hashtag Mueller Day. So well aware that Bill Barr was there to run interference for Donald Trump on the Mueller report.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
But then Dinesh D'Souza tweeted this yesterday. Bill Barr is a stereotypical small town sheriff, overweight and largely immobile, whose rank incompetence results in the whole town being robbed from under his nose. Then asked to explain what happened, Fatso breaks into laughter and insists the robbery itself is bullshit.
Bullshit.
Right. So that's, they're turning on everyone who decided to step up, just like Donald Trump does. Eventually, Donald Trump will turn on everyone who is right. in his inner circle, including family members, which we have to talk about Ivanka next, but yeah.
Yes, of course. I wish the comment about being largely immovable or whatever the comment was about, I wish that would stick to Barr as much as apparently drunk will stick to Rudy.
Yeah. Well, for the first time, that Bill Barr attitude worked in our favor. I mean, up until this point, up until Thursday night, every time I'd hear Bill Barr talk, it would drive me bananas. The passive aggression of his tone of voice.
Well, right.
Yeah. You know, I was just doing what I was told as attorney general.
You know, and it's been observed that Barr looked incredibly comfortable. And it's like his body language seemed to say, I can stay here all day if you want me to, you know?
Yeah. And so finally, it's something where that passive aggressive attitude lands squarely in, you know, the right side of the ledger at long last.
Finally. Yeah.
But the truly fascinating thing was Ivanka Trump's remarks regarding Bill Barr and how she believed Bill Barr's conclusion that there was no there, that there was no election or voter fraud or election fraud, whatever Donald Trump was claiming was bullshit. And Ivanka Trump actually agreed. Here's Ivanka. This is from Thursday night. This is from day one.
How did that affect your perspective about the election when Attorney General Barr made that statement?
It affected my perspective. I respect Attorney General Barr. So I accepted what he said was saying.
Yeah, wow.
Instead of believing Dad.
I would have given just about anything to be a fly on the wall in Donald Trump's living room at Mar-a-Lago as that clip was first played.
Now, we've heard him try to explain it away since, saying, well, she was out of the loop. She didn't know what was going on. She didn't know what she was talking about.
Yeah.
And she was just expressing her respect for the attorney general.
Well, let's talk about that, because I think Donald Trump's reaction to her was to accuse her of perjuring herself. That's the real content of this thing that he put up on.
I don't know.
What's the name? Is it Troth Central?
Truth Central.
Whatever that was. Yeah, that website. Whatever it is.
Troth Central. Yes.
What is it again?
Truth Central.
Something like that. He wrote, Ivanka Trump was not involved in looking at or studying election results. She had long since. Yeah, she had long since checked out and was, in my opinion, only trying to be respectful to Bill Barr and his position as attorney general. And in parentheses, he wrote, he sucked. Keeping it mature, right?
Yeah, it's like he's 8 years old.
And by the way, I like that he had to say Ivanka Trump at the beginning. As if he were to just write Ivanka, we'd be like, who the fuck is Ivanka? Who's he talking about? But he had to say Ivanka Trump just... Because, I don't know, he's got to use all the characters.
And I think we have to talk about this. I'm look at the video of Ivanka's deposition, and it looks like she was put together by the people who did Max Headroom. She looks artificial.
Uncanny Valley.
Because it's not the video, it's her.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I worried that people might even think the video was fake because she looked so fake.
It's funny you mentioned that, because that was a comment that Kimberly said while we were watching the hearings. She was like, yeah, they're going to think all of this is deep fake.
I did a double take and I went, that doesn't look real. That looks animated. It looks like manipulated, you know, but that's just Ivanka.
That's just Ivanka. She just maybe had the servo motors freshly calibrated in her face or something. Wow. I don't know. But this part here, only trying to be respectful, suggests that she was lying in her testimony and really actually didn't agree with Bill Barr. So Donald Trump is accusing his daughter of perjury, basically, in this tweet. And also, I forget who tweeted this on Thursday night, but someone said, well, look, Ivanka finally fucked her dad. Thank you.
Instead of the other way around. He reminds me, Trump reminds me, and this is, we've entered the stage, well, let's call it the Dr. Smith phase.
Yeah.
If you ever watched Lost in Space, you know, Dr. Smith was stranded with his family in space, and he was a coward. He was just the biggest coward in the world.
Yeah.
And I think one of his classic lines was when the monster, space monster, was approaching, he said, take the boy, not me. And that's Trump. He said, take the girl, not me.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes, because he will throw everyone under the bus. That was amazing about this, that all these people were willing to go to bat for Donald Trump, to risk their lives, to risk the rest of their lives being incarcerated in some cases, in the name of this game show host con man. I can't get beyond that, whether we're talking about campaign staffers, inner circle, White House people, or the Proud Boys, for that matter, the Oath Keepers. At one point in the Thursday night hearings, second hour, we saw a clip that I hadn't seen before that was shot inside the Capitol Rotunda with one of the insurrectionists saying, I'll lay my life down if it takes it. That was a guy pledging to die for Donald Trump. And I just kept thinking, wow. All of these suckers who were deceived into invading and occupying the Capitol on orders from this guy. It's so sad that all these people were so easily deceived by this and professional con man.
That's going to be key to the 7-part plan that Trump allegedly had to overthrow the election. It was the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers, who I've said all along were working closely with the White House. But it was those groups who breached the Capitol. But they wouldn't have had any success at all, and they would have been outnumbered by the cops if Trump hadn't also brought a mob to D.C. Of people who felt cheated, like this guy. So those people were used. Trump has used his people, his voters, all along. He's used them for money. He's used them for physical clout.
Yeah. So we still have day two to get to, and I want to talk about Gaslit. I want to talk about Sunday night's Gaslit and spend some time on that, just because we have this special insight into G. Gordon Liddy, Buzz and I having worked with him, Buzz much longer than I did. But
it's like we knew him, but we didn't know him, you know?
Exactly. And I'm really glad that we didn't know him better.
Yes.
Because I don't know if I want to peel back that onion too far in real life.
We'll take
you know what I mean?
Just fine. Thank you.
Well, if the pandemic was an utter disaster for your credit cards, you probably upped your balances. Maybe you were out of work for a while because of COVID and you had to make ends meet. So you increased those balances. And if my guess is correct, you're probably paying that top allowable interest rate on that debt. So it's going to take you years and years to pay it off. So why not refinance your cards into a super low interest rate and save a ton of money every month? And here's how to do it. With Lightstream, you can roll your cards into one low payment at a fixed rate as low as 4.98% APR with auto pay and excellent credit. That's way lower than what you're paying right now. I bet you're probably paying around 19% APR. You can get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000, and there are absolutely no fees. And just for my listeners, you can apply now and get a special interest rate discount to save even more. All this just for you. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/Seska. That's LIGHTSTREAM.com/CESCA. I got a link in the description conveniently for you under this episode at bobseska.com. Subject to credit approval, rates range from 4.98% APR to 19.99% APR and include a 0.50% auto pay discount. Lowest rate requires excellent credit. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/Seska for more info.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Bob Seska.
All-time favorites all day long.
We all were born helpless, and now you're numb to the pain. We climb aboard the propeller. propeller out the way we came.
Oh, this is Nick Lutzko. This is some of his serious music. He does comedy music and he does serious music, and this is one of his serious tracks. This is from his album called Swords, a song called Software. NickLutzko.com. You know who he is. He likes to yell about boat parades and sitting next to Dan Bongino. All right, BobSeska.com/music to submit your work to the show. If you happen to be a musician, an indie musician, recording artist, whatever you identify as, please send it over. We'll play it here on the show out of commercials and so on. So thank you for doing that.
Yeah. So I do this sort of impression of G. Gordon Liddy, who Robin and I worked with. And it's the Liddy we knew talked in this sort of higher voice, as I've mentioned before.
Yes.
Well, Shea Whigham, to his credit, who was just an incredible actor, played Gordon Liddy in the Starz miniseries Gaslit.
Yes.
And he looked for the humanity. I've read an interview with him. He tried to look for the humanity. And so he saw Liddy as being very controlled. And so he used a very low, controlled tone of voice, but we want to share with you a scene that won't spoil the series for you in any way, but yeah, we thought you'd enjoy this because we're going to do the same scene that Shea Whigham did with the actor playing John Dean. I'm sorry, I don't have his name in front of me.
Yeah,
they were both incredible, this is that same scene in the Liddy voice we knew.
Yes, indeed. Yes, this will be a dramatic reenactment of that scene in the finale of this Gaslit miniseries on Starz.
Hey, Bob Seska Show, 2-Minute Theater. Here we go.
In a Watergate witness holding room with John Dean, Liddy draws a yellow number 2 pencil from a pencil holder and addresses Dean. A portrait of then-President Nixon hangs on the wall. Liddy speaks.
As part of my training in the Bureau, they taught us how to kill a grown man with just a sharpened pencil.
Dean looks nervously at the door.
Can you believe it? One swift thrust right below the Adam's apple, and the subject bleeds out silently. Apply enough pressure, and you might even hit the brain stem.
Liddy places the pencil on the conference table, directly in front of Dean, and tells of his fantasies about killing Dean.
I was visited, you see, haunted, you might say, by a creature. A fat bitch rat with buck teeth and suckled teats that dotted her underbelly. Night after night, I could hear her in the walls mocking my weakness. And deep in my heart, I knew she was right. She brought me down to nothing, that bitch rat. My spirit gave out completely. And then a miracle happened. In my darkest hour, I heard her calling me. I followed her voice into the wall. And you know what I did in that moment, face to face with that vermin I'd been seeking for weeks?
Dean, rattled, shakes his head. No. Liddy answers.
I broke down. Weeping like a baby.
Dean asks, and what happened to the rat?
I ate her. First I ate her pups, and then I ate her. I ate them all. Don't you see? I ate them so you could live.
Liddy caresses Dean's head and reaches for the pencil on the table, drawing it slowly closer, and then slipping it into Dean's pocket. Dean sighs in great relief until Liddy draws his head into Dean's with the words,
I love you, John Dean.
Guards enter, one of them yelling, Jesus Christ, who put you two in the same room?
And there you have
scene.
It.
Yes, thank there you very much.
The Bob Seska Show, 2-Minute Theater, a minute with. And here's why I wanted to bring that today. Because I've told this story for years about Liddy saying, I can kill a man with a pencil. And I thought maybe people thought I was just making that up, but this movie substantiates what John Dean has written and said about a moment that he and Liddy were accidentally trapped together in the same witness room.
Incredible. Incredible. Yep. So many Liddyisms in there. I was so gratified to see that they did the pencil thing. And that was because I immediately flashed to you. I was like, that's what Buzz has been saying all this time. I can kill a guy with a pencil.
I shrieked at least twice during the movie. And one of them was the pencil. Another was the Bob Redford, Bob Woodward scene.
Where we see
the back of an actor who's supposed to be Bob Woodward from the Washington Post. Uh-huh. But they have his hair and his clothing looking exactly like what Redford wore in the movie. And so that I thought that was kind of a cool thing they did. And I also, it did my heart good to see Dean Haldeman, Ehrlichman, Coulson digging ditches on a military prison farm.
Oh, yeah. Well, the only thing that would have made that Liddy scene even better would be if he had referenced how Mrs. Liddy's cake frosting, you could snap yes. like a twig. He was very, very into that.
We could have done that the other way around because you do a very good Liddy also. And,
that's true. But
that's how we heard him. Shea Whigham gives it a very low-key and very controlled approach because he knew, and this is true, that Liddy was all about control.
Right. And your Liddy voice is one of my favorite things in the whole world. Because it's so perfect. Because we knew each other when Liddy was just across the glass from us, and knowing that you had to work with that guy and how much animosity you had for him because of his politics, the shit that he used to say on his show, and then putting that into your mocking impression of him is just the perfect thing.
But I just wanted people to know, I didn't make up the voice. Bob can testify that that's similar.
That's his voice,
And I didn't make up the thing about the pencil. And so I felt vindicated by that. He also used to say, you can kill a man with a single drop of nicotine the size of a head of a pin.
Oh, you know what? Every time I drive on the Beltway here, I think of Liddy calling the Beltway an 8-lane death strip.
Yes, yeah.
And it's literally every time I hit the Beltway, I'm like, oh, here I am on the 8-lane death strip. Wow. Yeah.
Forgive us. That's hard for us to shake. And it was, I guess the wound was reopened this week when we finished watching that Starz miniseries. Get it if you get half.
Yeah. I mean, we sat across the glass from the devil. I mean, that's essentially what we're talking about here. Liddy was and will always be the devil. What did they say in the miniseries? That he was at the dark, rotting core of the American lie. It was some sort of really well-written, poetic line.
Well, like, the whole thing is well-written. Yeah, very, you know, it's a fun series.
Yes.
You'll watch it and you go, well, geez, this is more fun than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, yeah.
And you'll be on the edge of your seat because it's the story's that compelling.
Well, and as the culminating scene with Gordon Liddy, this is a bit of a spoiler, so if you want to jump ahead 15 seconds, when they cut to him as the episode is wrapping up and he's actually kept the rats as a pet in his cell, and they're sitting in that box, and the pups, it cracks me up to no end that he's referring to the baby rats as pups.
Pups.
Little pups. I ate the pups, too. I ate them all. But he's got them all as pets, so it turns out he didn't eat them. So,
you know, was he crazy? Was he calculating? I think he was both. Remember, this is a guy who ate rats so John Dean could live.
Yes.
So he didn't have to kill John Dean.
Oh, and he desperately wanted to kill John Dean.
Yes, he did.
I will never forget that. I mean, he would never stop talking about how much of a rat John Dean was.
Right.
Yeah, that was always a thing. John Dean's name would come up. A caller would mention, he's a rat. He's a rat.
And I know we're running terribly behind. I've been doing more reading, darn it. And the Washington Post has been commemorating the 50th anniversary of the Watergate story breaking.
Yeah.
And their breaking of it. And they did a sort of a retrospective over history that I found very instructive. And it crystallized something that I kind of knew, but I'd never heard it put in this terms before. I'll try to keep it brief. We had the Vietnam War, and then we had the Pentagon Papers. Because before that, before the Vietnam War, Americans just flat trusted government.
Yeah, yeah.
Things were different there. Reporters kept secrets about politicians. Things ran smoothly. People had faith in their government.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had the Vietnam War and the Pentagon Papers that revealed that the U.S. government had been lying about the war to the American people. And then that was immediately followed by Watergate. So each one of these steps along the way deteriorates Americans' faith in their government.
Mm-hmm.
So they went from trusting government to not trusting government after the Pentagon Papers, trusting it even less after Watergate. And then, interestingly, this article points out that because of our reaction, and take note of this, Bob, because of our reaction to that Nixon corruption, to that Watergate era, we passed a bunch of laws and we started cracking down on ethics.
Yes.
And we went from zero ethics convictions convictions in 1 year to 1,300 in the next year.
Wow.
And guess what? Our remedy to that corruption problem actually further eroded public trust in our institutions and in government because they said, well, look how many crooked people there are.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
Our very efforts to clean it up made people believe even less.
Yeah.
And, you know, there will be efforts after this to clean up government so that this Trump thing never happens again. So, you know, it's interesting. But the article argues that it's sort of the crumbling of these things that has led us to this moment of dealing with Trump.
Oh, yeah. And there's a great conversation in the series finale of Gaslit where they're talking about the phrase slippery slope. And yeah. And the one thing I wanted to add here as we wrap up the Gaslit portion of the conversation today is poor Martha Mitchell. I mean, that's the big takeaway from this series. Obviously, she was the main character as much as we were fascinated with Gordon Liddy. The shaft that Martha Mitchell got historically, where she was right from the beginning and no one believed her. It's sort of the opposite of what people felt about the government. Originally, they were like, well, you got to trust your government. And then after Watergate, oh, I don't trust the government at all. Right. Well, it was the opposite with Martha Mitchell, where initially they didn't trust Martha Mitchell and what she was saying. She was absolutely telling the truth. And, you know, I love the, you know, as it culminates at the end at her grave with the flowers arranged to say Martha was right, and how they held on that for a good long time into the credits for that final episode. And it's so appropriate because she was, and she's only now being vindicated. We've talked about Watergate a lot on the show. I've studied it a lot, and hardly ever mentioned is Martha Mitchell. And now that all changes, and thank God for it, because she was courageous, and she was actually decimated as a consequence of it.
Yeah, and there's an interesting lesson here, I think, and that is that once you're cast as something, Martha Mitchell was cast as kind of a joke. And so even after the truth came out, I mean, a biographer came out with a book upon Martha's death that explained to people, so this knowledge of the role Martha seriously played has been around for a while, and there are certainly things not to like about Martha Mitchell, but she was right, and it was good that she spoke up because it kind of helped make things happen.
That's right.
And it's the second movie I've seen in the past year where a woman who wasn't taken seriously, and the other is Tammy Faye Baker, only now we realize what a wonderful human being Tammy Faye Baker was. And if you were to evaluate by Christian standards, far more of a Christian than her husband Jim Baker, because she actually truly cared about gay people, about the LGBTQ community as she knew it then. And she was vilified, or at least discredited, for a person because of her makeup and all of that, as a person not to be taken seriously, because of her devout religion, not taken seriously. Martha Mitchell, drinker, a gossiper, not taken seriously. Mm-hmm. But they were both right.
Yep,
they were both right. That's but right. History remembers them as being ridiculous, as something you can write off, just as history will now remember Rudy as a drunk.
Well, notify the affiliates. We're running a little late today.
It's because I'm here.
It's okay. We've got lots of information to cover.
We have so much. And I'm trying to insert things along the way just to make sure we cover everything.
Yeah.
We got to talk about the ratings for the hearings.
Yes.
We weren't sure anything was going to happen there. We weren't sure it was going to move a ratings needle. But over 20 million people watched that first one. I don't have the latest numbers yet on yesterday's. And remember, Fox, there were like seven networks that carried the thing, including Fox Business, but Fox News Channel, alleged, did not carry it. All total, and this is just television viewing, over 20 million people watched that hearing.
Incredible.
Now, that doesn't count. That doesn't count however many watched online, and you know that's a substantial number. And it doesn't count the number of people who listened on radio, because it was carried on radio as well. So more Americans than anybody expected were paying attention to this. They have a hit on their hands. Fox, meanwhile, did not carry the first hearing, and they got 2.9 million viewers. They were almost matched in audience by their own business network that usually has an audience of about 100,000 people.
That's right.
And all of the networks averaged around 3 million, with seven of them carrying at about between 20 and 21 million people watching this thing. Fox, meanwhile, got a 2.9.
Yep.
And so yesterday, Fox decided it would carry the hearing.
That's amazing. And they got on board just in time because, yep, at least according to the Midas Touch guys, and I don't have independent verification of this, so take it with a grain of salt, viewership of day two of the hearings, at least across the Midas Touch streaming channels.
Oh, right. Yes.
Increased by at least 40% from day one within the first 12 hours of airing. And so from their perspective, there was a bump from the first night to the second day, I guess you could call it.
Not a fluke.
Yeah, yeah.
Not a fluke.
So
yeah.
I imagine that is probably reflected in the television ratings as well. And even if it's not, even if it's about the same or a little less, we're talking about something that happened during the day on a weekday.
Right.
So the ratings are naturally going to be lower. But if they were actually able to hold steady or beat the curve, so to speak, then that's a huge accomplishment.
I do wish that for these daytime hearings that PBS would do what it did during Watergate, and that is rerun them at night.
Right.
People who had to work and couldn't watch the Watergate televised hearings during the day would come home at night and reliably turn on their public television station and watch it replayed for them so they could catch every minute of the thing if they wanted to. And it was the Watergate hearings and Sesame Street. Without those two shows, PBS would have not survived.
It's amazing.
Watergate, actually, with the help of Sesame Street, Watergate saved PBS.
So day two was all about proving that Donald Trump was aware, at least from the people around him, that he had lost. And what precipitated all of this, apart from Drunken Rudy, we'll get to that in a second, is the basic fact that Donald Trump just cannot accept loss. He just refuses to see the loss for what it is because that's just not the way he's wired.
Right.
So it was all because he's a sore loser. In fact, the sorest of all losers. And so all of this trouble and hassle and people being incarcerated and people being ruined for life and so on, well, for one, they deserve it. But two, it was all in service of Donald Trump's brittle insecurity and his sore loserism. I mean, that's what it comes down to.
And they did it.
Yeah.
They did it so they could have their name on stationery or some, they wanted some halo effect from Trump, and because conservative agenda.
Yeah.
The Republicans, the entire party, McConnell included, sold out their principles because they knew with this guy they could get a lot of their stuff done.
Yeah, and so with some of these people, how's that working out for you? Yeah,
right.
You may have gotten a ride on Air Force One, but you're fucked for the rest of your life. Rudy Giuliani, your reputation is dirt. The legacy for you could have been the hero of 9/11, America's mayor, and all of that bullshit. But now you're nothing but a drunken punchline with hair dye drooling down your face.
We have to say, in fairness, that he has, in his own defense, said that he was not drunk that night. But here's the kicker to that. If he was sober and he gave that advice, that's even worse.
So, yes, I enjoyed hearing this quote all morning yesterday. The apparently inebriated Rudy Giuliani on election night. So there were two teams inside the White House. There was of course, there was Team Normal, which I resent that. There was no normal on Team Normal. But I guess in relation to Team Rudy Giuliani, I guess it's all relative. So that's got to be a little bit normal if you're comparing it to drunken.
At least normal in the sense of being aware of reality and the law. Yeah, in that sense, they were normal.
Thanks to Chris Lavoie for pulling this music for me from the Stephanie Miller Show library, because this is now Rudy Giuliani's theme.
Rudy's theme.
Yeah, what do you think, Rudy?
It's despicable.
Yeah, I know, but I like it.
Yeah, and this label will stick with him forever because it was said repeatedly and with some certainty in that hearing that Rudy was drunk.
So given the choice between Team Normal and Team Drunken Rudy, Trump went with Team Drunken Rudy. That's all that needs to be said, I think, from this point forward. He said, eeny, meeny, miny, I'm going with a drunk guy. I can't get enough of this.
Rudy's an optimist. He sees the vodka bottle as half full.
Right. What else from yesterday? Chris Steigerwald's testimony did more damage, I think, to Fox News than anything we've said in a long time. Chris Steigerwald was the politics editor, the politics executive at Fox News at the time.
And he led the team he is a statistician by trade.
Yeah.
And so are the people who work for him. They are among the best in the business. They were they had a cooperative effort with the Associated Press.
Mm-hmm.
The Fox political division for counting election results is above reproach and was absolutely one of the best, if not the best, in the business. They were the first to call Arizona and the first, therefore, to call the election for Joe Biden.
Now, Fox News has something that they refer to as the brain room. And what I have always assumed it was is like a coat check room where you check your brain before going on the air.
Well, that makes sense.
But I think apparently Chris Steigerwald was in charge of the brain room, which is where they do all the calculations and where they came up with the idea that Donald Trump had lost Arizona, that Joe Biden had won, and they made that call. And ever since then, all these red hats have been hating on Fox News and going over to OAN and Newsmax and all these other sort of copycat networks. But this testimony I thought was interesting because initially Chris Steigerwald didn't seem to say anything. Like when he was first sworn in, he just nodded his head in the affirmative.
Right.
And then they asked him a question and he did another head nod. And I thought it was going to be one of these things where he was going to be resistant to answering questions, sort of like the documentary guy Thursday night. But instead, when he was asked who won the election, he used all the words. He said, Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. of the great state of Delaware won the election.
Yeah, that was a little twisting of the knife. He strikes me as an arrogant guy, which is maybe the one thing I didn't like about Bill Steigerwald. But he also really seemed to know what he was talking about. And I wondered if any other network executives were thinking, gee, maybe we ought to get that guy now that he's available. Because it does sound like he has a pretty amazing system for tracking election results.
Yeah, he was asked after November 7th, how likely was it for then-President Donald Trump to pull out a surprise victory? And Steigerwald said, you're better off to play the Powerball, was the answer.
Right. Gotta laugh. Gotta laugh.
God, I love this. I love this. Sucking it down like Coca-Cola.
His testimony was credible. And remember, he came to it. This isn't a Democrat talking. This is we don't know what his politics are. He may even be Republican. The important thing is he gave credible testimony because he's all about the numbers and he's on the side of the numbers.
This was really revealing. In fact, I was surprised how revealing it was. This kind of defines, this quote from Chris Steigerwald from yesterday, kind of defines Fox News Channel in a very salient way. He said, and it showed to me how much television, the perceptions of events, of television as entertainment, news as entertainment, and treating it like a sport, had really damaged the capacity of Americans to be good citizens in a republic because they confused the TV show with the real thing.
That's heavy stuff.
Yeah, indicates to me that they know at Fox News Channel that it's just a TV show, that it's just entertainment, and they've confused their entire viewership into believing that it's real life, and it's not.
We've no doubt that Fox got a call from Donald Trump, and you know, Fox came down on this guy. They fired this guy because Trump wanted them to, because Trump perhaps told them to.
Well, Mick Mulvaney is pooping in his big boy pants these days for some reason. He tweeted the other day, this would be yesterday, Trump's inner circle at the end was Giuliani, Sidney Powell, Lynn Wood, Peter Navarro, and then he wrote garbage in, garbage out. So the rats are throwing each other overboard is what they're doing.
This is the fun part, kids. This happened in Watergate as well. The more Republicans who fall, the more who will fall behind them.
Yep.
The more who come forward to talk, the more who will come forward to talk behind them.
Mm-hmm.
Because at that point, at a certain point, when the writing's on the wall, people are going to be looking to cut deals with prosecutors to avoid extended prison stays. And it happened in Watergate. You'll see it happen again here. Don't be sore about it, because if this is what it takes to get the information, I'm willing to make some sacrifices here and there.
Yeah. And don't buy Mick Mulvaney's crying. he's not trying. I mean, he's trying desperately trying to rehabilitate himself, but don't believe it. I mean, this guy was the chief of staff when Donald Trump decided to downplay and ignore warnings about COVID. Right. Mick Mulvaney was there for that first 4 or 5 months of 2020 when, you know, things could have turned and hundreds of millions of deaths could have been avoided if Donald Trump had done the right thing, the paint by numbers thing we do in the case of a pandemic right at the beginning. And he didn't. And Mick Mulvaney was there for all of it. So don't buy his bullshit.
This is one time I don't think Trump is thrilled about the ratings. You know what I'm saying? I mean, he likes it when people talk about him, but I don't think he likes the way this is going. He's got to be feeling this if he has any feeling at all.
Well, we have a couple more things to get to here, so we're going to wrap up the show here in just a second. But first, unlike some podcasts, you may have noticed we've got some crass commercial breaks in our shows, as G. Gordon Lee used to call them. Crass commercial messages.
Yes.
But here's the best way to listen to the Bob Seska Show without all those crass commercials. Just go right now to our Patreon page at BobZeskaShow.com. Scroll down to the link for the ultimate edition of the podcast and sign up for just $15 per month. In addition to your generous, generous support, we'll give you a completely commercial-free version of the Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday shows. Plus, you'll get the Shadow Docket on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and the Shadow Docket will be combined with the free show into sort of one big mega show with the free portion and the Shadow Docket, exactly how it's recorded, and no commercial. But wait, more things. You're also going to get the Friday After Party podcast with me and Kimberly included in that level of support, all for just $15 a month. You get everything we have to offer for that subscription rate. Again, BobSeskaShow.com. Bookmark it, send it to all your friends, and we thank you.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Bob Seska plays more music.
Okay, this is Air This Side of Caution, a song called We Don't Live Here Anymore. And yeah, I've already played this song. I think I played it last month. But I'm playing it again, and I'll tell you why. It occurred to me the other day, it's one of these things I think of as I'm falling asleep, and I'm panicked into being awake again, because I think on the show I was referring to this band as Air On The Side Of Caution instead of what the actual band name is, which is Air This Side Of Caution.
This Side Of Caution.
So yeah, I was getting it wrong on the show. So I apologize for that. I feel terrible that I misidentified the name of this band, because I really like this song. Again, the band is called Air, that's A-I-R, like the stuff we breathe. And then the rest of the name is This Side Of Caution. And for some reason, I was changing this to On The I don't know why. Oh. My brain was just going err on the side of caution because of the old maxim or the old phrase. Yeah.
Because we have extra time to fill today, I thought I would share. I lost a friend recently. She had been a co-anchor on when in the short period of time I was a DJ, and unfortunately she passed. But she did some great work as a public servant, and she was a spokesperson for the American Cancer Society at one point, and also for the New York State Department of Public Health. And when she was in New York working for the governor, she. I guess it was the Ebola thing. I don't remember what disease was scaring us all at the time. But whatever it was, the scientists, the doctors would put together a statement, the public health experts, and she would go through her before going out. And they had used the phrase, err on the side of caution. Mm-hmm. And she said, no. You don't say that. You never admit error. You say acted out of an abundance of caution.
Oh, yeah. That makes so much sense.
She invented that phrase. And now we hear it all the time about everything.
Wow, that's incredible.
Acting out of an abundance of caution. But anyway, Chris Smith, we miss you.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I'm so sorry. Yeah. That's terrible. And also,
it was great to know her, and we had a lot of fun, a lot of laughs together on the radio, too.
You're connected to everyone. You're like Zelig somehow.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird.
So what do you make of this story? NBC News caused a bit of a stir yesterday, or I guess we could say Benny Thompson caused a bit of a stir, where the story came out that there will be no criminal referrals handed down by the 1-6 committee, although I think the press is kind of getting this one wrong. What's your take on this one?
I think the press is getting it wrong, and I think a lot of our fellow progressives are getting it wrong.
Yeah.
As I said earlier in the show, you don't have to make a referral. If they present their case right, the DOJ isn't going to need, you don't have to draw a map for them, you know?
Yeah.
The DOJ is watching this. That was one thing that Merrick Garland wanted us to know yesterday, that he's watching, his prosecutors are watching.
Mm-hmm.
Believe me, they're taking notes and making phone calls and checking their own records. They are on this more than they have ever been. And it seems to me that all the committee really needs to do is present a case so compelling, the Department of Justice, because of that evidence and because of public pressure, which it doesn't normally bow to, will have no alternative but to file charges against Donald Trump. So this whole thing, this is kind of a red herring to me, this business of will there or won't there be referrals. I think that's the least of our worries.
Mm-hmm.
Let's present a perfect case that is where prosecution is unavoidable, and it should work from there.
From a journalistic point of view, though, this piece is this article at NBC News is bad, is how they refer to these things. Bad. The headline in particular is
bullshit.
It is bullshit. The headline says Jan 6 committee will not make any criminal referrals, chairman says. And then if you scroll down to the actual quote, it says, our job is to look at the facts and circumstances around January 6th, what caused it, and make recommendations after that. And then he said, the committee has not issued a conclusion regarding potential criminal referrals. We will announce a decision on that at an appropriate time.
I believe that's September.
But there's nothing here that indicates no criminal referrals. He's just saying when we get to the time to make criminal referrals, that's when we will make criminal referrals if there's evidence for it.
Right, right. And I just say everybody settle down. You know, that would be my advice. This is not the topic at hand. This is not really, I'm not, it's the least of my concerns about this investigation. I just want it to be well presented in such a way that the American people see and the Department of Justice sees that a prosecution is unavoidable.
Yeah.
Unavoidable.
The Associated Press, this is the lead of a story they ran on Sunday. Members of the House committee investigating the Capitol riot said Sunday they have uncovered enough evidence for the Justice Department to consider an unprecedented criminal indictment against former President Donald Trump for seeking to overturn the results of the 2020 election. That is your Associated Press on Sunday, a piece written by Hope Yen with the headline, Jan 6 panelists, enough evidence uncovered to indict Trump. Mm-hmm. What's the problem here?
They're beyond that. They're so far beyond that. I think they're finding new things to bring people's attention to, including this whole business of wire fraud, of defrauding Trump supporters, telling them that the money would be used for one thing and then using it for something else is clearly fraud, interstate fraud, a federal crime.
More than 100 Republican primary winners support Donald Trump's big lie. So we got 100 Republicans running for national statewide office who all agree with this evidence-free conspiracy theory lie that the election was stolen from Donald Trump.
And worst of all, many of them are running for Secretary of State or Election Commissioner. If there was ever a time to pay attention to local elections, this is also where our government is being overthrown unless we pay attention and step up and either run for office or support somebody, recruit somebody, and make sure everybody votes, because the people who are going to decide the outcomes of the next elections are not people you want deciding the outcomes of the next elections.
This is the thing I thought of as soon as I saw this article in the Washington Post was 2024. 2024. Do we honestly want Republicans in charge of Congress and more state legislatures?
Right.
With the 2024 presidential election looming again? You don't want Republicans, more Republicans, backstopping Big Lie version 2.0 if it should happen in 2024. So these are the things we have to bear in mind. We got to start thinking long term in this country. And I'm not talking local. Necessarily about those of us who are diehards and we follow politics and we vote and all the rest of it. I'm talking about the folks. We got to get the word out to the folks, as I've been calling them, who don't necessarily follow politics, to change and shift their priorities when it comes to voting. That these short term things about gas prices or inflation, whatever silly season thing ends up coming up to, that kind of crap is not worth voting on, because it's not going to change a goddamn thing. It may make you feel better when you aggressively press that button in your voting booth or something like that, but it's not going to do a goddamn thing to change anything. What it will do is it'll change things for the worst, because then we end up with a Republican Congress who will backstop Donald Trump if he tries this bullshit again.
And destroying democracy. It really was. I've seen a number of people posting on Twitter saying, I'll pay $10 a gallon for gas if I can keep democracy.
That's right.
They are, in fact, paying over $9 a gallon in Canada. Joe Biden didn't do that any more than he did raise the prices in this country.
Yeah.
So we have to crush that foolishness with that kind of truth. That's one way to go. The other is harping on this, and hopefully the Jan 6 committee will accomplish this, showing Americans that, yeah, you may not be happy with the Democrats right now, but you definitely don't want to elect these guys.
Right. And one thing to wrap up with here is I've been noticing some Republicans, in particular Marsha Blackburn, Marjorie Taylor Greene, some others talking about Joe Biden's war on energy. I know Marjorie Three Toes wrote something the other day, something along the lines of make energy great again or something like that.
God.
Well, here's the truth about Joe Biden's record on domestic energy production. According to Bloomberg back in February, this is February 2022, the U.S. sees record oil production next year moving even higher. U.S. oil production will grow even more than the government previously expected as a scorching price rally drives producers to boost drilling. Oil output will average 12.6 million barrels a day in 2023, an increase from its previous estimate of 12.41 million, according to Energy Information Administration data. The current annual all-time high of 12.3 million barrels a day was set in 2019. This year's production forecast will also be revised higher to 11.97 million barrels a day from an earlier projection of 11.8 million. So, yeah, we're setting records for domestic oil production. So I don't know what we're talking about here with Joe Biden's war on energy. Of course, it's bullshit.
Bullshit.
He's done everything he can, and it has barely moved the needle as far as lowering gas prices. He's helped a little bit, but this underscores that he's done so many things that this result underscores that there's little any president can do.
Right.
Presidents don't control oil prices. It's global. We need to keep driving home that message and the fact that the other guys are traitors.
Right. I guess one last thing here. Ginny Thomas pressured 29 lawmakers in Arizona to violate the law and put forth fake electors. Clarence Thomas's wife in the middle of all of this shit, in the middle of this gigantic conspiracy to commit election fraud, and more dimensions of it come out day by day, right?
For those progressives who enjoy conspiracy theories, we could raise the question, why isn't this being investigated?
Yeah.
The Jan 6 committee has indicated it has no plans to include Ginny Thomas in its investigation.
Interesting.
What's up with that?
I don't know.
I'm the last guy to be suspicious about things, but that's a little strange. So I hope we get an answer.
Might have something to do with Liz Cheney. I don't know if there's a connection between Liz Cheney and Ginny Thomas. There could be.
Yeah, I don't know.
This other story is developing as we speak, this story about Congressman Loudermilk, how he brought a group of 12 people to the Hill on January 5th. And his response was, well, we were only in the Cannon office building. That's where we were. It's still Capitol Hill, you asshole.
Right.
Good God. I mean, the plot was not just restricted to the Capitol itself. And in fact, there are very few congressional offices inside the Capitol building proper. A lot of members of Congress have offices in those ancillary buildings, also on the Hill, adjacent to the Capitol building. So this wasn't just about disrupting the vote tallying. This was about, seizing the offices of members of Congress as well. So it's entirely possible that Loudermilk was prepping these guys, giving them advanced knowledge in terms of how you take the tunnel from the Cannon building over to the Capitol building and so on. This all could have been legitimate information handed to these conspirators by a member of Congress, and he's trying to pretend as if he had nothing to do with it.
And Marge Three Toes, meanwhile, is pointing people toward Pelosi's office. So there's so much to uncover. This is a thick book.
Yes, well, more to come here on the Shadow Docket on our Patreon page, BobSuskaShow.com. Bookmark it, send it to all your friends, and sign up now. $5 a month gets you Shadow Docket every Tuesday and Thursday. We'll see you over there, folks. Bye-bye.
I love you, John Dean.